Welcome to the HBO's podcast, where we put the hoe in Hollywood. We're your hosts, Maddie and Sam, here to discuss trending pop culture, TV, and movies. Welcome back, baby.
Yeah, we are back. Host Sam and Maddie. Hello.
Yeah, we took a little hiatus. The strike kind of scared us off, and, you know, life is life. It gets right. Busy. And so anyhow.
We literally have so many. We're here. We're talking about House of the Dragon this season two. We're going to be talking about a lot more. There's a lot of shows coming out this month, so we're going to be busy gals. But today, we are talking about House of the Dragon Season 2, Episode 1, A Son for a Son, directed by Alan Taylor, written by Ryan Condal. And I'll just share a quick synopsis before I give you your friendly neighborhood spoiler warning.
Oh, yes. Spoiler. Get out of here.
Right. So we'll just do the spoiler now. We will be talking about House of the Dragon, season 2, episode 1, premiered this past Sunday, but also any references from season 1. So if you haven't seen everything current, and go away. Come back when you watch
it. Game of Thrones, even maybe Game of Thrones. If you haven't seen Game of Thrones, like, get out of here. We might be referencing that. If you haven't seen Game of Thrones,
then who are you?
True. Discipline. A high tower of sorts.
Someone who actually has a life, probably. I don't know.
Anyhow.
Okay, the synopsis. While Rhaenyra struggles to come to terms with her son's murder in King's Landing, Alicent grows concerned that Aegon's small council may lead them to an all-out war. Laerys suggests Aegon needs a new hand, and Rhaenyra arrives at a fateful decision. My God, what a way to start the season. Yeah. Maddie, overall thoughts. Give them to me.
Well, my first overall thought is I did appreciate them for lighting the scenes a little bit better. I know that they have gotten a lot of complaints about that since Game of Thrones, even to season 1 of House of the Dragon, which even I was a victim of complaining too. So I am happy about this first episode. There were a few really just, I hate to be like a nerd, but just some really well-lit shots. I was like, thank you. I can see this so clearly. I thought it was a great opener. It was very fun. It picked up. A lot of things happened. A lot of great callbacks to just like the Game of Thrones universe. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, I was pretty pleased. I feel very excited.
Yeah, I do too. So, I'm scared. I'm very, very scared. I don't know what's going to happen yet. My mom keeps trying. I have to like limit my conversations with her because she keeps trying to like ruin it because TikTok ruined it for her. And now misery loves company. And I'm like, Mom, I have the book. I've read to like up to where we are now in the book, but it's like, I don't want to ruin it. For myself, I want to see it happen out on screen because I trust, you know, this crew to make it feel alive. I had a lot of critiques about season 1 the first time around watching it, and I just rewatched it last week, and I just let myself be immersed in it and like feel like I was there, and it was much better experience versus going into it as like a critic. So I will say that I'm excited. I'm scared. I feel like most of the excitement is just like nervousness because I know that this is going to be horrific to watch. And yeah, but I actually, my favorite part of it and like where I see it going is that we have like a divided like black and green, like two very clear sides. But even within both of those, there's a lot of complexity. It's not just it's not going to be clean. It's not, you know, I don't know, like the Daemon and Rhaenyra and Daemon and Rhaenys and Lord Corlys and all of that. Just there's a lot of like shit going on there. But then we got a really good look this episode into the High Towers and that side of it and the Red Keep. And I think that there's going to be a lot of a lot of like shadow conspiracy.
And I think like it's really nice because this is kind of what we loved about Game of Thrones. There was a lot of conspiring, and it's nice to get a little bit of that back. So yeah, I'm definitely excited. So let's just dive right in.
Yeah, so I mean, okay, so first things first, the new theme. The song is the same, but so this is, I was like, Maddie, I want to say this on while we're live, but
Yes, I'm so excited.
what it reminded me of immediately was there was a quote that Helena had said. So basically the new theme, for those that didn't skip it, it's like threads now. It looks like someone sewing and threading,
Like
something.
embroidery.
Right, like embroidery. Right. And one of the things that Helena says, it was when Reyna died. Was that her name? Reyna, right? Damon's wife?
Lena.
Lena. It
Already.
was, sorry, Jesus. Well, there's gosh.
Yeah, we do know.
Yeah, so it was during her like memorial service, right? And it's when everybody is together for the first time in a couple years. She's sitting, Helena is like sitting on the ground. She's playing with a spider, and she said, hand turns loom, spool of green, spool of black, dragons of flesh weaving dragons of thread. And she says that over and over again. And it made this new intro made me think of that, like her almost like premonition of
Yes.
the dragons being like threads weaving in and out of each other, also meaning massacring each other, basically, because
Absolutely.
that's what's going to happen.
Yeah.
So that was, it was really it, the first, as soon as I saw it, I was like, whoa, this reminds me of that one Helena quote where she compares the dragons to threads. And I don't know if it actually has anything to do with that, but I thought it was really interesting. Thought it
No,
was a
I
really
like
interesting
that.
point.
And obviously on a visual level, like I love that they changed it up. Like it's a nice diversion from Game of Thrones, because in the first season of House of the Dragon, like the opener was very similar. It was like a build, right?
Right. It's very
Yeah.
brutalist.
So, yeah, it was like a 3D architectural rendering. This is a little bit different. This is more like scenes that it's like painting out in a sense. But yeah, I love that in an artistic direction. I'm like, yeah, this is great. It feels appropriate for like the time,
Well, especially
whatever
because it's
time it
really
is.
woman against woman. And I think before there was a lot of woman against woman, but like it was very much at the power of men. And I think with this, it's very much Rhaenyra against Allison and what the two of them truly want at the end of the day.
Yeah.
And so I love that, like, it turned to like this threading thing, because that's one of the things that a lot of women do and young women
And that's
do.
what Helena's doing all the time.
Yeah, she's
She
always,
was like making a
embroidering.
pattern.
Yep. So yeah, I thought that that was really interesting. And then my next thing was just the start of it. So it like immediate full body goosebumps, because we see the raven flying through the woods. We could tell it's the north because the trees are bare, and the sad Stark song plays. That song only plays when a Stark has died in Game of Thrones, and when a
Spoiler.
family member is being notified about it, or something terrible has happened to that family. So it coming through, and then going to then we see the gates. I mean, I personally love the Starks, obsessed with the Starks. I was so happy that they were the season opener. Like it was based on them and their traditions. I thought it was so fucking cool. It all just felt very like I was just immersed in it. It was the sound,
Yes,
it was the
I felt
visuals,
the same way.
it was the dialogue of I can't remember the Stark's name, but just the with that
Regan.
Yorkshire accent, which I love so much.
Yes,
Favorite
you
accent.
do.
It was everything I wanted and more. I also think that like I loved the just the idea of them showing how important manning the wall is, and how the Starks have always been divided between North and South. And I think that that's a big thing for like Jon Snow and Game of Thrones, kind of a callback to that, of like feeling conflicted with we're either battling death in the North or kings in the South. And it's like but they're really the ones that truly understand there is something bigger and worse out here, and we're the only ones that are protecting you guys, the rest of you, from it. So that it was nice that I don't think that that's going to be a major theme in this at all. But I did like that there was like kind of an ode paid to that, because the Starks are the heart of Game of Thrones. I'm sorry, ladies and gentlemen, they really
Absolutely.
are.
Absolutely. Listen, when I saw Cragen or Cregan, I don't know exactly how to say his name, and freaking little Jacerys talking like politics, first of all, I was like, those are both Starks. Okay? Those are Starks. I don't care if that man is a Targaryen. That is a Stark.
Also resembles Jon Snow.
Yeah,
he does. A lot. You know? He does.
Yeah, so it was just, I love, like, the deep bonds, you know, of the history, too. Starks and Targaryens, like, it, you know, it was meant to be. Like, that's just what they do.
Although, yeah, it's fire and ice. It's fire and ice.
Yeah, I hate to say this, but I do imagine that the opener with the sad Stark song means there's going to be a lot of sad shit afflicted upon the Starks.
Well, maybe not the Starks, but I think maybe in general. I think for the Game of Thrones, that was definitely like if, you know, for people that have just like, I don't know, ears the way that I do, every family kind of had its own sound, so to speak. And for the Starks, it was only them. Anytime something sad happened anywhere else, that sound never played. It was only played for the Starks. But I don't imagine them getting, I mean, because we see at the end of it, and this is just war talk, but he, Cregan, declares 2,000 older men to the Rhaenyra's claim, right, to fight for her. I don't imagine a terrible amount happens to them, although, knowing George R.R. Martin, who the fuck knows, because he just loves to make them suffer. He really truly loves to make them suffer. So
especially
who knows?
Especially the ones that don't deserve it. I mean, Luke. Poor baby. He didn't want any of the smoke. He did not want to become Lord of Driftmark because everyone would be dead then. And I quote, poor baby didn't even make it. He didn't even fucking make it.
Oh, God. It was
maybe
the worst
a blessing for him, but yeah.
Ugh. I mean, okay, so maybe, speaking of that, let's just give, I guess, a recap for what happened. So basically, we ended season one, like, as Aemon is killing, he kills Luke, right? Like, they both are venturing out to the Storm's End. Thank you. I really should have brushed it. I have been brushing up more on like the history before like Aegon's conquest and just geeking out about that I have not. I'm like not fully immersed right now in
Tricky. I've also been trying to brush up. My mom. Oh, this is what I wanted to tell you. Hang on, just a second. Me and my mom were talking about it because she watched too. This woman could not get the names right. She was like, Viserys. Viserys, and I was like, you mean Viserys? It was so freaking funny. Every single one she got wrong. Close, but wrong.
Yeah, shout out, Michelle. You're a real one. So Storm's End, and Luke goes out there. It's his first like venture. His dragon is tiny. He is tiny. He's probably like 12 years old when this happens, 13 years old. And Aemon is there, and Aemon, you know, just a psycho. And, you know, the thing is that Aemon was just chasing him. What it shows in the show, and this is something that I think we'll see a theme of and what we'll hit on in a lot of our episodes coming up, because I'm going to read the passages in the book, or like the, as it comes out. Like, I'm going to read, like, after I watch the episode, I'm going to read it in the book just to compare. And, the book is very, it's objective. It's written by a maester who doesn't actually have inside knowledge. He only sees what is public knowledge, and he was just writing it for history. We don't know intentions. We don't know feelings. We don't know dialogue. We don't know what happens behind closed doors. Like, that's not at all. The book is very fact of the matter from a public perspective. So the way that they wrote the ending in season one was that Aemon was just kind of chasing Luke, and then Luke's dragon came up and fire shot Vhagar in the face. Vhagar got pissed off, chased him down, and ate him. But it looked like Aemond didn't actually want that to happen. He lost control of Vhagar, which I think is one of the actually more kind of an interesting approach, because it does show that even though Aemond is riding Vhagar, Vhagar is an old bitch that's going to do what she wants. And at the end of the day, and I think that that's very, it's just wielding such powerful, such a powerful weapon that if you don't have control over it, that could be very scary. And
it also fucks some things up.
Right, exactly. So they play, the way that the show depicted it was that it was actually an accident and his intent was not to kill anybody. Mm-hmm. But the way that the book, it was just matter of fact, it was just like Aemond killed Luke, you know, and like via Vhagar. So like it, you know, so that's how it's basically, it's exactly what happened as we ended. And then we pick this season up right where that leaves off, maybe a couple days or a week or so later. So yes, anything else to say about Winterfell? Because you guys, I just have to admit, there is a man from Love Island, UK. He's been on it twice. His name is Callum Jones. And he
likes Northern.
He's hot, right? He's, you know, but it's not like he doesn't hit, looking at him doesn't really do anything crazy to me. But like when he speaks, he's from Leeds, I believe, which is like near York, which is kind of Yorkshire. It's kind of Manchester. And it, there's something about the way that he talks. And I literally just drew the connection today after rewatching House of the Dragon and hearing Cregan Stark talk again in that like Yorkshire accent. And I was like, no fucking wonder Callum, like he every time, like I can't, and it's because all the Starks.
Callum is a Stark. He's a Stark. Yes. Honestly, that is really funny. That is just shows how much you love the Stark family. And true. I'm here for it.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. I was just going to say the last thing about the accent, because really they both killed it. I have to say, like, they're doing great. They're doing great with the accents. It's very, very, I think it feels authentic and I love it.
Oh yeah. No, and it was very, the music and the scenery and and like I said, Cregan, just his voiceover in the beginning before we even see him or anybody, it was just very nostalgic. And it was like, okay, you guys did justice to the Starks. Like, you made me feel things that I haven't felt in a very long time. In terms of like my respect. Yeah, the North remembers. Winter is coming.
Winter is coming. Oh man. You know, they just didn't know that winter was gonna take 100 million years.
Yeah.
To come.
The thing is, winter did come. It just came like once a generation and then it would last like a generation. So that's the history of winter. But that was one of the things that was interesting throughout the episode. And I thought that was why it was cool that they started with the Starks, because they always say winter is coming. But then Allison, which will bring us right into our next topic, because holy shit. But Allison, after the deed is done, says, I felt a chill in the air. Winter is coming. Like, she says it. And then then in the council meeting, they bring it up again. And so we know that like the Dance of Dragons is going to happen in the midst of winter. That's what this is sounding like.
Yeah.
Which is devastating, because winter is devastating in it of itself. And so not to mention
dragons don't like the cold. That's why they won't fly over the wall.
Right. Right. Yep. So speaking of Allison,
Allison, girl, I was so happy. Wait a minute. You know what? I have a note.
You
about
were
this.
Happy?
Just her and Kristen, there has been so much tension there, sexual tension. I needed them to get that over with. I know. Free text this by saying the audience is about to hate me because I do have some feels for Team Green. I am still Team Black at the end of the day, but there's something that I connect with for Allison. Like, this girl is just a woman of devotion. Okay. And we'll get into that. But I wanted to say something about the way that they had that act. And it was really quiet, which I thought was interesting, because it's still like that, like the whole thing, like she was very quiet and like the way she was making sounds, like the even the way they got redressed was very quiet. And obviously they're being sneaky, but it to me, it like lended like, you know, that extra hand to like that religious, devout, you know, theme. And right. I thought that was very interesting that they did it that way.
Yeah. We don't do this podcast on video, but I roll my eyes every time Madison gives any sort of, I don't know, credit to Allison. I fucking hate her. The thing is like, I truly don't really like a lot of people. I don't think I actually truly like a single person in this show. I like the one twin that came over and brought Rhaenyra her crown, which there's an Eric and then there's someone else. It's Arik, and then, but then his twin is still back in King's Landing.
I forgot they got twins.
I thought it was like Eric and Derek. I don't know. We will know their names next time. Sorry, yes. Folks. But I think he's truly the only person that I actually like. I'm intrigued by a lot of people, but I would say it's probably him. I do really like Rhaenyra, but I don't trust her as like a character that I'm willing to like attach myself to.
Say that I liked Allison's. I just can empathize with some of her behavior. Yeah, this bitch, my podcast mate, is trying to set me up. Listen, no, I. So the thing is, this is why I love Game of Thrones and the House of Dragon series so much, because I don't want to understand a psychopath, but for the story's sake, I do want to understand. I'm like, why are you guys being so crazy? These motives, these behaviors, these devotions. Like, I want to know more about, like, Otto's wife and his upbringing. And, like, you know, I know that his dad was also Hand, right?
I believe so. But, like, yeah, no, I agree. I think that, like, I actually find it easier to watch the psychopaths than I do people like Allison, because I'm like, Allison, like, she is genuinely seemingly a good person. So what I have trouble with is, why is she making these horrible decisions? Like, why is she acting so unempathetically? How are you so pious and so like righteous, and then you're hypocritically doing the exact same thing that Rhaenyra did that made you hate her in the first place, you know, 15 years ago, whenever it was? Like, it's just, there's like, I understand why she made the decision. I don't understand how her integrity is so fleeting. And like, I just, like, I truly get it. She had to fuck rotting Viserys for years. Right. Yes. Like, I get why Kristen Cole being outside of her door every single night, the yum yum that he is, of course she's going to fuck him. That's why all members of the Kingsguard should be fugly, in my opinion. And the thing is like, I also do like their relationship. I'm like, yeah, you got a little sneaky link every night standing right outside your door.
It's like, true.
Duh. I would do the same thing, but I'm like, but don't like dish it. Where you're like, I don't know, it's just, there's the hypocrisy for me that drives me crazy. And I got that from her in season one too. Towards the end of season one, it like, she just became so unbearable to watch, because there is just, I'm like, there, like, I don't see any like thread of integrity behind you. Like, it's just, I just don't see it. I don't see how somebody can, I don't know, it's a tough one for me. Like I said, like, on one hand, I do empathize with her and I understand her as a woman and her as somebody that's always followed duty and always followed whatever. And her husband's dead. She can fuck whoever she wants, blah, blah. Right. She should be able to do that in a perfect world. But why are you shitting on Rhaenyra for doing the same thing?
Yeah. You know, no, you're not wrong. You're not wrong. I do think that.
And I feel like, and even my point is, sorry, I understand that she was a different person when she was shitting on Rhaenyra way back when, but how, like, are you showing any empathy to Rhaenyra and her decisions now that you are making the same decisions, right? Okay. Like, there's no grace there. you know?
No, there is no grace, but I think it's so far removed from that. Like, yeah. We are talking about it situationally, which is why I think it makes me so intrigued with Allison. And it's probably the reason I do like her is the exact reason you hate her. Is like, she is a good, seemingly a good person, but she is struggling like any human would, even in a religious view. I'm like, oh, you're like sinning. Duh. Like, okay, cool. Like, this is very human of you. Not saying that any of it is correct. These are different times, but I think like it's really interesting to see her go through these, especially not being like a vile person at heart.
Yeah.
You know, like, I don't want to feel empathy for her because I don't truly, but, like, when I think about her timeline and why she is the way that she is, I'm like, oh, shit, like, you really, I don't want to say she doesn't know any better because she's grown now, but I mm-hmm. think, like, circumstances have changed so much. It's, like, the family and protecting this line, and, like, I did all these, like, why would I go back on my word now when I already did so much damage, for one, and for two, and even if it wasn't that, because I don't think she's that, like, I don't think she's stupid. But, like, I also think.
Right. Right. I mean, I understand where Allison is coming from on that regard, especially because I had forgot until I watched season one again that the ending was basically, you know, or part of the ending sequence was basically Viserys thinking that he's talking to Rhaenyra on his, you know, deathbed, literally, and was basically, you know, just telling him her about the Song of Ice and Fire, and she thinks it's about Aemon or Aegon, their kid. And, mm-hmm. you know, and then that kind of changes everything. Although I do believe that 90% of her mental was already there. And then he just needed to give her that quick little 10% to push her over the edge. But
agreed.
But yeah, so I understand her and the moves that she's making for the line, for her family, for Aegon, for the protection of all of them, because she knew that what Otto said, I mean, she took what Otto said as truth when he said, if Rhaenyra comes into power, she will challenge any other potential heir to the throne, and that leaves your boys at risk, period.
Right, right.
So, like, I understand her moves like that as a mother and as, you know, the queen consort and whatever, but, like, but I just, the whole Allison and Kristen thing, as like hot as it is, because I enjoyed it myself, you know, it was like, okay. And like, I also enjoyed her having good sex. She deserves it.
She did.
I think that part of like my anger about it, it comes from the fact that she also is so pious, but like also like the only conversations that we've really had or seen between her and Kristen have been of religion and of how people and women should carry themselves and of how Rhaenyra is, you know, whatever, a spoiled cunt, like he said, and whatever. It's just, there's, I think that a lot of my anger is towards him as well. Especially because I still find him so fucking hot and it drives me crazy that he himself is a cunt, fucking twat. And I still find him hot because he just is. Arguably, he could do no wrong. You know, he's that good looking. It drives me crazy.
No, not that. No, he is good looking, and it is frustrating. But you're not wrong. Like, they do mostly have conversations about how people should be, especially in like a, you know, way that is like, this is how you should live your life as a man, as a woman, as a person of the society, you know? And, you know, of course, like, that's why I think it pissed us off so much at the same time. Like, as viewers, we're like, okay, you're going to talk all this shit. You know, if you're going to talk it, you got to walk it. So it's frustrating to see that from her, especially because she's been so, like, stronghold in all of that, and him too. Mm-hmm. And the thing is with him, like, she is stronghold in her views, but like she is not nasty in her words in the way that she talks about people. Like, I think that's the thing with Sir Kristen. Like, he's nasty the way he talks about Rhaenyra. He even says to Aemon's later, like, oh, a cunning spider, I think is his words.
Yes.
And I was just like, damn, bro. And like, I remember in the first season, he, I think, says something about Rhaenyra being a cunt to Alicent while they're walking. And she like literally stops in her tracks.
Yeah.
Because she's offended. She's like, yo, like, we might be on opposite sides, but like, let's not do that.
Right. He is nasty, and he is still nasty. Almost two decades later, that Rhaenyra didn't want to run away and sell fucking oranges with him on the beach of the fucking free cities. Like, come on, bro. The fuck kind of life could he have offered her anywhere else? Like,
I know.
Get out of here, you stupid, just so silly.
Idiot.
Yeah.
Like, why would a princess want to do that? Goodbye.
Maybe before she was, like, announced heir, probably she would have just ran away. But, like, I'm just like, you say this after her coronation? Get fucked, Kristen.
Literally, bye.
Kristen, nobody ass hole.
It's upsetting. Alicent and Kristen, they're upsetting, especially Kristen. He's fucking,
I mean, I do want to see more sex though, I'm not gonna lie. Like, I'm just like, we need it. I literally, one of my fears telling Maddie, like, I think what makes a really good well-rounded show is drama, politics, interpersonal relationships that are very complex, and last two being humor and sex. I want to see sex on screen. I want to see tension on screen. I want to see it, maybe not sex all the time, but like, I want to see tension. I want to see sexual tension. It just makes things, I feel like it just adds a level of human nature. And that's what I like to see. I like to see human nature. I like to see ambition. I like to see love. I like to see trauma and sadness. And I also like to see some sex. So I was talking to Maddie when I was rewatching episode one, and I was like, I don't know how they're going to plug sex into this. They're going to have to get creative because season two is literally going to be all about destruction. And they managed to plug it. So hats off, writers, because
applause, baby.
This was never mentioned in the books. Again, anything happening behind closed door is not in the book. So I am happy that there is this. Alicent and Kristen are very good looking people. They have very complex personalities. They also have a very complex relationship amongst each other, like with the two of them. So I think
with Rhaenyra, they both have a common denominator person relationship wise.
Yes, very true. So I think,
oh my God, it's a thruple.
It kind of is, but Rhaenyra wants no part of it.
Are we sure about that? Because I'm pretty sure that Alicent and Rhaenyra are in love. Still pushing this theory.
Okay.
She wants a part of that. She wants a part of Alicent. Well, and Alicent wants a part of her.
And Alicent and Kristen are just fucking and pretending that one another is actually just Rhaenyra.
100,000%. Are you kidding me? And I mean, I get it. Did we not see her on the premiere when she had the fucking dragons in her teeth? Oh my gosh, she looked like such a fuckboy. And I was all the way here for it. I was like, excuse me, Rhaenyra? Oh wait, I'm sorry. Ugh, God, I knew I was going to do that eventually. Because I'm talking about the character and about the actor, I just accidentally misgendered them. So sorry.
It's fine. It's good. Yep.
Yeah, sorry. I knew that was going to get me one of these days because they're playing.
Well, we're in the throes of passion ourselves.
Yeah, we are. We are. But it's, you know, like,
and immediately. It is difficult. I think I have seen a lot of articles just about that, how it is. It's just difficult when you're talking about a character versus then immediately switching to talking about, you know, the person themselves. Alicent and Kristen, I watched, so after this episode, if you're watching on HBO Max, or Max, or whatever the fuck stupid ass is calling it now, God, I hate him, but I don't want to get disenfranchised, so I'm not going to say his name. there's like the after the episode, they usually do like a little talk, you know, Ryan Condal, the creator, will come on and, you know, kind of interview about certain things, and then he has some writers, actors, etc., do little bitty interviews for like 5 minutes. But before that, on this episode, they had like a full length or like an extended length trailer of what the season is going to be that I had just seen actually for the first time tonight, right before this. And Kristen, Cole, and Allison show no signs of slowing down. In fact, there is one scene, like one clip it of a scene that I saw that I'm very excited for, and it is very passionate. And I'm yes. here, like, again, here for sex. We are the HP hoes. We're putting the hoe in Hollywood. It is what it is.
Yes, we do,
keep
baby.
The hoe in Hollywood.
Please.
But that also
please
brings me,
keep it in there.
That also brings me to my next segment that we did want to talk about, which was comedy. So
yes.
to start us off, I had said if, you know, our listeners here have listened to us talking during season one, which by the way, season one of this was our very first podcast ever that we did. Isn't
oh,
that crazy?
That's so sweet. Look
I
at
know,
us.
Oh, I know.
Season two.
So if you were one of the 30 listeners,
welcome back. We love you and we appreciate you. And sorry that all our podcasts were so bad before because the levels were really off.
Yeah, we were just starting. We were babies, basically. We didn't even know how to walk yet. But one of the things that I had said, I feel like a few times about this show is that it was missing so much comedy compared to Game of Thrones. Game of Thrones, we had incredibly funny casts like Bronn, like Podrick, like Tyrion specifically. We had I don't know, there was just so many, not many. Tyrion was pretty much the only main character that was like had like a level of humor in pretty much all of his dialogue, but then so many supporting characters. This show, it's a little bit tougher. We don't have as many storylines. There's not as much going on. It's not really a universe the way that Game of Thrones was. It's pretty much just focused on one thing. So one of the things that I was worried about that them bringing in along with the sex in season two was also how are we going to elevate this humor? Because in season one, there was not really any at all. I think I had one laugh out loud moment from Damon. And he was probably calling somebody a cunt. And then in today's or this episode that we're talking about, there was also a time where Aegon calls somebody cunts, and it was also a laugh out loud moment. So maybe that's just a very funny word. But okay, Maddie, what do you think? You had thoughts on humor as well.
Yeah, no, I definitely liked the humor from Aegon. Like, I think he's like a bit unserious. Like, we got, you know, that like his vibe is just a bit like above everybody. Like, he just doesn't really give a fuck, which is fine, whatever, he's a king, I get it. But I really liked the line when he's walking in, which you did too, when the guys are announcing him, they're like, and the magnanimous, you know, King Aegon, and he says like to him like magnanimous, and like makes like the funniest face. He's like, I don't know. So I had to look that up because it's not like a common word that I use. I'm sure I knew what it meant years ago, but like, you know, whatever. So it's even funnier because, from Oxford Languages says magnanimous means generous or forgiving, especially toward a rival or less powerful person.
Which is the opposite of what he wants to look like currently.
Well, right.
He
but
doesn't
like,
want to look forgiving or generous or powerless to Rhaenyra, right?
Well, right. And it's funny, too, just like in a Targaryen thematic way. Although, but like, I think it's really interesting that they open with that. And then when he sees the people's, like, petitions? He's actually, like, I don't know if he's trying to be kind or if he's just fucking stupid.
Yeah,
I can't tell.
I think it's both. I think it's a little bit of both.
Okay.
He is definitely stupid. He's definitely not. This was a question that I had going into the podcast. It's like, what kind of king do we think Aegon is going to be? And it's very interesting because if we compare him to, like, I was kind of comparing him in my head to Robert Baratheon, who's the first king that we meet in Game of Thrones, and then to the Mad King who we hear about throughout Game of Thrones, and then also, just all throughout Game of Thrones, and then Joffrey, Tommen, you know, and yeah. So I was comparing, and I'm like, okay, he's not he's not as horrible as Joffrey is. Like, I don't think that he's full blown psycho.
Right.
But I do think that there is, you know, like narcissism there. I do think that there is some sociopathy there because
fucking nepotism for sure.
Well, yeah. But that's not a trait. Well, yes. All heirs are nepotism babies.
I know that. But sometimes they get chosen. So not always.
Oh, that's true. So one of the things that actually in the behind the episode that I watched was that specifically with Aegon, with his children, he brings Jaehaerys, which is the son, to the small council meeting, which is crazy because the son is four.
Four.
And one of the things, I think it's Ryan Condal, the creator, that's walking through why Aegon might have made that decision. And he said, you know, Viserys never did that with Aegon growing up. Aegon right. never learned what it was to rule. He never learned what it was to be a man. He never was at his father's side. You know, that all of that went to Rhaenyra. Rhaenyra was the one sitting in the small council meetings and, you know, helping make decisions and all of listening in on conversations. And so there was this like this kind of lighthearted, I think, almost effort and give back that he wanted to give Jaehaerys. I don't know. So that was just, I think, something that was interesting that was said because I didn't think about that. I didn't think about what Aegon, the battles with manhood and the battles with ruling that he himself is going through right now because he never actually had an example to lead by. And then even the examples that he had was everyone was saying, you know, basically that Viserys is soft as fuck. He's heard it from multiple sources, you know?
Yeah.
So I think that we're going to see a lot of like, manhood complexes with Aegon.
You know, just like to call back to the first season, I think it's interesting because when they find him, because they're gonna bring him back to be king and like challenge him, they find him like in basically they go to the pits where the kids are fighting first because he spends a lot of time there. So I'm like, first of all, like maybe he's not Joffrey crazy, but he's some kind of
he's fucked crazy. Up for sure for
yeah,
sure
he's fucked up. And like, you know, they look in the pit and there's like a blonde kid, they're like, oh, is that one of his? And he's like, probably one of many. You know, so I'm like, okay, so like there's definitely some limits that he does not give a fuck about.
Yes.
But does that mean he's like completely emotionless? I don't think so. Like, I think like he, similar to Alicent, I don't know if he's as good as Alicent, but I think that like there's a stroke of goodness in him, like especially when we see the petitioning. Like, again, I was like, I don't know if this is just he's dumb or if like he's trying to just like please the people as a king.
I was gonna say I think that maybe it's not that he's actually generous, it's just that he is a people pleaser, and that's where that was coming from, because the first thing that happens is a guy comes up, he's afraid to talk, and then Aegon says, I think genuinely, like, don't be scared, it's okay,
yeah,
like, you can talk, and that felt really nice and real from him. And the guy is basically like, okay, well, you guys are taking 10 sheep a week or whatever the petition is, and he says, okay, we will make sure that you have a full flock again. And then Otto comes up and he, you know, does his Otto thing, that fucking asshole, and he's like, but it's so funny because he's like, well, can't we just do it for this one guy, like he came all this way.
And then he says no one will know.
no one will know. And he's like, well, the kings were whatever. And but it's just, there is this like ignorance in that. You know, I don't want to call it dumb. I think that it's just blatant ignorance because he has like no idea what he's doing. He has no idea what he's doing. And he, I think that there is a people pleaserness in him. And I think that, you know, a lot of his troubles when we saw him as the youth, like just over, you know, just overly drinking and hanging out at the wrong places and being around the wrong crowd was probably because he wasn't the second son. He was the first son, but he was technically second to Rhaenyra his whole life.
Right.
And Rhaenyra got the attention that he desperately wanted. But I think by the time that Viserys, and we kind of see this in season one, if we analyze it, by the time Viserys made his decision to anoint Rhaenyra as his heir, I feel like he was just kind of done with it. He was like, okay, Like, I'm done. Wipe my hands clean of this shit. I'm done. I've spent my whole life waiting for just to pass this on to somebody. Now I can just live the rest of my life. That's when Allison comes in, has children. It's not like he didn't celebrate those children, but at the same time that those children were being born, he was getting sicker and sicker. And so they didn't get the same fatherhood that Rhaenyra ever got. And and so I think that there's resentment from both of the boys on that front. And where Rhaenyra kind of got lucky that she was the first. And so anyway, my long-winded point of just saying that, like, I think that Aegon is, he's starting from zero. Even when he was being crowned at his, like, inauguration, so to speak, or whatever they call it in medieval times, he's nervous walking up. And he even says to Allison in the carriage ride over to the place where he's going to be crowned, he's like, well, Viserys, he never wanted me. If he did, I'm 16 years old. Like, he would have given this to me already. Like, he didn't want this. And so I think that it wasn't until he, like, got on, you know, the stage and everybody was cheering for him and all of that, that we kind of see that turn. And now we're seeing him just, like, full-fledged, bliss is ignorance, you know, or ignorance is bliss, and he's just, like, I don't know, so he's owning it, but not really owning it.
Point that I wanted to talk about with him, actually, it's really interesting to see, like, he never really wanted it because he knew it wasn't really for him, but now that he has been thrust into that power, like, a switch went off, like, it's so strange to me. And I do wonder, like, if we'll see something happen with him where he's like, oh shit, like, I wish I didn't assume this power, just because, like, the switch was, it was so easy for him to, like, I don't know if it was easy or if he just felt like, okay, well, this is what I'm being thrust into, like, I have to, I don't fucking know.
That is interesting, and I don't know if we'll get a clear indication on, like, kind of more into that, because right now we're about to get into some serious actions action item and reactions because of those actions. So, like, I don't know how much further, like, we're going to go into why these people are the way that they are. I would love it. You know, I do love, like, when it's building on a backstory at the same time that this huge thing is happening up front. But that leads me into, I want to talk about our theories, because we did, just speaking of Aegon, talked about the Laerys, let me pull you for a second. And just the him kind of plotting, and Aegon clearly is impressionable. So what do you think is going to happen from that? What do you think is going to happen with Otto, or, you know, and with Allison stance of Otto and...
They're all definitely going to get Otto out somehow. Like, he's old. You know, I think he said, like, he served the last three kings or something, or I don't even know. So it's just, like, he's basically telling him, like, he's not with the times. Like, get this boomer out of here. You know, like, bye.
So get that fucker out of there. I hate him.
But the thing is, it's Game of Thrones, so he's probably going to kill him. I mean, Laerys is already killed a few people, like,
he just killed his own dad and brother.
And he killed those other guys, and then Allison just talked to him in, like, the hallway. She was like, what of them? And he was like, they no longer breathe our air. And I was just like, Jesus, dude,
she has, like, fallen into depravity, as they would say. Straight up into depravity, that girl. She's lost.
And I think that he might end up killing Sir Criston Cole, because he's got little eyes everywhere, and he's gonna know. You know, he said, oh, like, the maid said you were indisposed. So, like, he fucking knows. Like, so I feel like he'll kill Otto, kill Sir Criston, and then he'll have his way with Allison. That sounds terrible. But he's been running for her feet for a long time.
Very long time. Very long time. Yeah.
And she let him. Remember?
You know, the thing is, there was a scene when he first was introduced, when Allison was going to meet him, like, in the hallway or wherever, before he says that she was indisposed. And it pans up from his feet. And it looks like he doesn't, like, there's something that I know he's got an issue with a foot. I don't know what that issue is. But I'm wondering if his foot fetish stems from I wish that I had two good feet.
But I think that make it might sexual. Be, yeah, I think that's probably what they were alluding to. I'm not 100% sure, but I also do wonder on that note, because I had thought, I was like, oh, I wonder if he was born with, like, a little foot, like, problem, or if it was something that happened later. Yeah. I'm curious to know.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, no, but I think that, yeah, you're not wrong in theorizing that he just kills everybody that's in his way, because that's clearly been his way thus far. I think that he's going to know about Allison and Kristen Cole. I think Otto has suspicions. There was a look that he shot them when they both walked in the small council together.
Yep.
So, and really what I'm scared of, sorry, this is off topic, but going back to just the Allison and Kristen thing. What, I mean, I'm not scared of this. I hope it happens. But we saw Kristen and Eamon are really close. And they've been close since they were, you know, since Eamon was a kid. They're both the best fighters in that circle. And, you know, they both train together and et cetera. Eamon literally starts the scene off saying, and Kristen is very informal in the scene in his, like, undergarments. And they're just talking about war shit. And they're just being bros. And Eamon is like, you know, you should lead the battle on foot, and I, you know, will have your overhead with Vhagar. Like, that's what should happen. And so they clearly are very close. This is when Kristen says, you know, Rhaenyra is a cunning spider. I was thinking, rewatching it the second time now, knowing that Allison is full blown fucking this man, I'm like, wow, what if Eamon found out? If Aegon found out, I don't know if I couldn't even predict, because he's unpredictable. But with Eamon, like, I'm just like, I feel like Eamon would turn on Allison.
That's how I feel too.
Yeah.
Yeah, because, like, Aegon, I don't think is actually going to give as much of a fuck about her fucking Sir Kristen. He doesn't have ties like that. He's like, okay, whatever. But I do think Eamon would be more upset.
100%.
Like, and it's not even the fact that it's his mom and someone that he's close with. It's about, excuse me, Allison having love for the enemy and being a fool. Because if Kristen has love for Allison, then he's a fool too, because he can't see clearly.
Oh, that's a really good point. That's a really good point, Maddie. That's like, it's not a different face, different name, but, like, it's just about the feeling and the vulnerability there, not about who it is.
Well, it's about, right, and it's about the positioning and the logical strategy making when they're talking about war. Like, Sir Kristen is like, oh, well, she has a good heart. You know, Rhaenyra put the poison into her when they were young. You know, like, he's trying to back her decisions, and that's bad for the realm, so to speak, according to the men on the small council.
Right.
So that puts Sir Kristen in the way of their plans. It's not even about the emotions, really. Like, it is about the emotions, but it leads to the logic and the strategy.
Yeah, no, that's a really, really good point that I didn't even think of. Like, from Eamon's perspective, it's less about, because I'm like, okay, I would feel like, for Eamon, I'm an emotional person, so if I'm trying to empathize with what his character would feel, I would feel like, my mom is fucking my best friend. That sucks.
Well, that's part of it too.
Right, but it's less about how he feels towards her or towards him. It's more about, you're also the weak link. By letting my mom is clearly the weak link by having love for Rhaenyra that gives her this vulnerability that's not good for us. But if you have all this love for my mom, then you're weak. There's a weakness there too. And you're right. I think that that's actually more so how Eamon would approach it. And where his, yeah, it's a great point.
Yeah.
Okay, so anyways, Aegon as ruler, I think he's just ignorant, but there is a part of me that does feel sorry for him, in the way that Viserys truly did not treat him the way that he treated Rhaenyra. He didn't give him the same respect that he gave Rhaenyra. He put respect on that girl's name his whole life. Yeah.
I mean, like, I feel bad for him, but, like, sorry, you're the second son, if you will, you know? And, like, you shouldn't even be thrust into this position anyways. Because we all know that Viserys would have done it properly if that's what he really wanted. He had plenty of fucking time to do it.
Right. Well, right. And so with that being said, I think that there, I think a lot about how each of the sides, green versus black, actually match up, stack up against one another. It's talked about, obviously, all the time. You know, this is going to be a dragon war. And then Aegon says, well, my dragons are bigger. And, you know, that's like, it's just, there's such big factors that like weigh on both sides of the scale of like weather. But like, I think that we truly need to add that like Rhaenyra actually, she doesn't have war experience because Viserys was a peaceful king, but she does have experience in running a team and knows that, especially with Viserys, a lot of his experience came from as like the hand of the king situation and just people on the small council. Every time he noticed that somebody was making ambitious decisions or trying to sway him in a way that will serve themselves better than the realm, he weeded them out quickly. And I think that with Rhaenyra, she's got a really strong idea of that and just how like the politicking amongst major houses might not be her strong suit, but the politicking in her own doors is going to be vital for her campaign. And I think that Aegon doesn't know. Like I said, he's impressionable. He's listening to fucking Laris right now, right? Like he's going to, as much as I hate Otto as a human being, I still think that he's the best option for Hand of the King right now. I think it's his grandfather. He's got his best interests at heart. He wants to see the family live. He wants to see the family rule. He's going to do everything to keep that happening. I think that Aegon is coming from a place of just immaturity and ignorance versus where Rhaenyra is coming from is she might not have the same power dynamics yet. She's still she knows who she can trust and who she can't, hopefully. Right. So I think that like when we're going tit for tat, I think we need to add like a brick to Rhaenyra's side on that part because she did get the privilege of actually being around Viserys while he was ruling.
Yeah, no, I think you're absolutely right. Like Aegon, he's going to be a little bit unpredictable. I actually do think that you made a really good comparison to the, what was his name? The Baratheon King?
Oh yeah, Robert Baratheon.
I actually do think he'll probably be kind of similar to that, especially even in like older age, because I'm like, oh yeah, like he's kind of like loose, but he also just like doesn't give a fuck, but he's not like a torturous person. He's just, you know, whatever, like similar to Viserys, but maybe a bit more fiery.
Right. Like he's not afraid to go to war and he's not afraid to assert his dominance, but would he rather just be like getting his dick sucked and drinking a pint? Absolutely.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely. So yeah, that we'll see how it goes. I'm very interested to see what his character does. By the way, just a theory, because I know we're getting towards like the last segment, right? We're going to probably talk about Helaena next.
Yeah.
I just wanted to say, I saw some internet theories and I didn't know this before and I'm not trying to ruin anything, but people are saying that it's probably actually Aemon's kids with Helaena.
Oh.
Yeah, because I remember like in the first season, like when they were to be betrothed, like she's with the kids at the table and she's like, yeah, like he might just ignore you or something along those lines. Cause the Luke and Jace were getting betrothed to the Valyrian kids.
Yes, yeah, the girls. Yeah.
So, like, I'm just like, and I remember there was another thing that Aemon had said as a kid. He was like, "Yeah, well, like, if I, you know, would have been betrothed to Helaena, I would have, you know, taken care of my duties because, you know, but I didn't get that honor."
Right.
So, like,
That would be fucking crazy. Obviously, they would never know because they all share the same DNA. But the only thing that, like, sticks out to me about that as, like, it's a no is that, like, Aemon is the most incel of incel men I've ever fucking seen in my life. So, like, maybe not even incel, voluntarily celibate. Like, voluntarily. The man, I don't think he gets horny. I think that he's an asexual person. Yeah.
Oh my God.
But that's the only thing is I can't imagine him even with a boner at all.
That's not true because I'm trying to get a sex scene with him. The fuck?
Oh, yeah, me too, because they're all yummy. You know, Aegon, he's yummy as a person. He's not yummy as a character at all.
Obviously.
Aemond is yummy as both, for sure. Yes. In like a dangerous way, in both ways. Even his just not as Aemond, he looks dangerous. And I'm like,
ugh. He is, because he's so sharp.
He's such a sharp boy.
Such a sharp boy. And we love it. We love his sharps. His little stabby little face. Get over here. Stab me with your face.
Oh my god. Okay, yes, let's wrap it by talking about Helena, who I think is by far the most interesting character.
Yes.
And what happens at the end of it, of course, the horrible tragedy.
Yeah. So I just want to talk about Helena specifically because obviously, like, she is different than everybody else. Like, she, first of all, she's like a prophet of sorts. Like, she's like kind of like a seer, or what you said earlier, clairvoyant. That's a better way to say it. Like, she has some kind of like, I don't even know, it's like a power, but like, she's so socially like distant from people. I don't know how to like explain it. But it's very interesting because like everything she says is like has an underlying like story. Like, she's telling part of the story before we get there.
Well, right. And I just want to say with Helena, what's so interesting about her character in the show is that in the book, I think in the beginning, she's kind of, as soon as she like comes to age, you know, it's kind of talked that she's, you know, a little weird. But like in the show, she's fascinating to me because I do think that she's clairvoyant. Everything that she said has come true in one way. Even in this episode, when Aegon comes, he's looking for Jaehaerys. She says he's in the library. She says, I'm afraid. And he says, of what? And she said, the rats. And, you know, all the handmaidens. And then he looks around looking for rats and, you know, whatever. But then obviously it's foreshadowing what's going to happen later on in the episode. And I fully believe that she's clairvoyant. I actually learned, because I just, like I said, in the beginning of this episode, I've been digging into like the history of just like Westeros and Essos and that world and all the major events. And the fun fact, Targaryens, they are only on Dragonback because they used magic to make the dragon, like, to, you know, kind of convince the dragons to let them ride them. So Ooh. Targaryens use magic and have been using magic for a long time. So it's not uncommon, just like it wasn't uncommon for Bran in the Stark House to be a warg. It's not uncommon for, I think, a Targaryen to have special gifts either. So that being said, I think that it's magic. I don't think that it's anything. Yes, she's socially awkward and she doesn't have the same social skills as everybody else, but I do think that she's got a crazy
neurodivergent of sorts, you know?
Yeah.
I don't want to diagnose the fuck. Like, I'm not a doctor, but there's definitely something like, yeah, like a little like weird, I guess you could say.
I think it's something special, you know?
Yeah, like, absolutely. And that's why we think, you know, like, you know, I hate to use the word weird. I don't want to be negative, but yeah. No, you're right. Like, she is special. She's totally special. And I love her. Like, out of every character, I love her the most. Why? Because like, this girl is calm. She sticks to her own. She's minding her damn business. She's embroidering her little pattern and she's speaking her little prophecies and she doesn't kill anyone.
Right.
Okay. She has not killed anyone.
Yeah, no, she's very sweet.
She's not been plotting and scheming. She's been knitting or embroidering. Sorry.
Yes. No. And raising a family, you know, and like, I think that she's incredibly kind. And I think that it just like, I felt this way about Luke. At the end of season one, he was just one of the ones that did not deserve this to happen to him. I think anything that happens to Helena, including what happens at the end of this episode, she does not deserve it. Like, there are children, Aegon and Aemond, I would say most of all, that have shown that they're not genuinely good people or decent people that deserve, and then the adults, I'm like, they're on limits for me. Go fuck each other up. But like when it comes to like hurting Helena or any of Rhaenyra's kids, that's like where it like it hurts your heart because they're innocent. They're just so innocent. And Helena, yeah, what happened was awful. So in the book, it's we learn about blood and cheese in the book. It's definitely a Daemon plot. It is not said that he, because like I said, no dialogue in the book, but basically he sends blood and cheese into the Red Keep and he says a son for a son, which is said in this episode, but it was never in the book that his original target was Aemon. It was basically just any sort of revenge, a plot of revenge at any capacity. Blood and cheese, we don't actually know what happens with them.
Rhaenyra's command though? In the book?
Well, yes. So she says, I want Aemon. Well, okay. That's the thing is, like, it's not really known because that would have been behind the scene. Like, it would have been behind closed doors. I imagine that Rhaenyra would have given that in the book, just seeing where things are going.
Yeah.
But that's the thing is, like, it's undisclosed. So the book, it's like, it leaves so much up for imagination and interpretation that you don't really know. And I think that that's one of the more fun things about the show is that we're like, okay, well, this could be the way that it worked out, but it could have been different, you know, like if we're talking about this as if it was real life and real history. So, and then they make it's kind of like a cheeky way of, you know, when the blood says, okay, well, what if we can't find Aemon? And then you get like a shot to Daemon and he kind of just like smirks and looks down. Like,
yeah.
And I don't put it past Daemon in his recent, just what we've seen so far this episode, to be like, yeah, fuck it, son for a son. I don't care who you find, just kill a boy.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, so, and that really fucking sucked. But first of all, I can't even believe that you can access the fucking castle that easily. I mean, I guess you gotta know the tunnels and the halls, but like, come on, people make maps. We're humans.
Mm-hmm.
We understand mazes and designs. Like, we're going to learn them halls. So I did. That kind of pissed me off a little bit. But I was also like, okay, I get it. Like, you guys got, like, the route of the city. He knows the underground world here. Fine. But I was just like, nobody stopped them.
Yeah.
Where was everyone?
Yeah, it did feel hella unguarded. And I think that, especially at
they
a time.
They walked right past the king.
Yes, but Aegon, again, dumb.
So
I think that I felt the same way. I'm like, okay, this was a little too easy. But like also remember Rhaenyra in season one was able to get right out of her own room very easily too. I think that the castle was built by Aegon the Conqueror, who had a lot, you know, he had three dragons on his own, not to mention any other Targaryen family that followed him over. He built the Red Keep, he built the castle, and he was probably cocky as shit and didn't think that he needed so much security because he had dragons. And so, like, it's almost like I feel like the design of it was probably on some confident shit, and they just don't really think that they need all of that security because who is going to try them? You know, anything that tries them will burn alive. So
that's
kind of where my mind goes with it. Yeah.
Yeah, no, that's a really good point. But they get in really easily, but oh my God, they're both dumb. They're so dumb. Which one is it? And I'm like, first of all, neither of those children are of, like, he literally said, missing an eye and also probably can fight. Do you think that 4-year-old and that fucking 2-year-old can fight?
Well, no. And then it's almost like then that's when they said, well, he said a son for a son, right? And they were just desperate to get the fuck out of there before they burned alive. So,
right. And they want to get paid too.
Right. So, you know, what was interesting is that two things that happened in this episode. Helena, in the beginning, when Aegon comes into their quarters and he's looking for Jaehaerys, the son, and she's like, he was like, well, I want him to sit on my small council meetings if he's going to be king. And she says, what if he doesn't want to be king? And so she shoots him a look. And I just thought that was interesting. And then flash forward to like what happens later on that night where she could, both of them look like boys. It is a boy and a girl, but both of them look identical, so you can't really tell. And then she actually does point to the boy, and I think mm-hmm. she is putting him out of his misery at that point. I think that she can see that his life will, like, it will be very, very hard, him as a boy and as the heir of Aegon's kingdom. And I think that that's where that decision came from, because as a mom, and, you know, you can't make a decision like, you can't possibly make a decision like that, but she made it and she was serious about it. She saved her girl. But I don't think that was anything to do with, like, the love there. I think she loved them both equally. But I think that it was, you know, she's looking at it, like, especially, like, even clairvoyant or not, in that moment, you know, your husband being the king is why this happened.
Correct.
So why would you want any more of this in your future, you know?
Right.
So I just thought that was interesting.
It's like a very give them what they want moment, you know, like, especially because she tries to take off her necklace first, be like, I have a necklace of high value. Like, she still had, like, a very motherly instinct, but she was like, fuck, if I can get out of here with one of them, I'm going to. And you're right. I do think that it was more of a decision about, like, what his life would have been like as an heir. Like, she's like, these kids are fucking 4 years old and there's two hitmen coming for them. For what?
Right.
You know, so, yeah, no, I agree with that fully. That's kind of what my read was, too. I just didn't know whether it was actually Jaehaerys or not, because you're right, they look identical. I was like, excuse me.
Yeah.
I don't know who those people are. Which one is which?
And they look like twins. They look so similar. Yeah, so I think that Helaena, I love that they're using her as almost an instrument to tell the story in a different way and to foreshadow, and especially in her cryptic way of speaking. I fucking love it. I think that she's so interesting. And I love that she's not only interesting, but she's fucking kind. And, you know, and that's just, it's like, it's refreshing to have that kind of kindness and sweetness and innocence on TV still. Or especially with this show where everybody's corrupt and complex and
So, and I just want to end on you before we actually got on and did the podcast, we were talking about this moment, and I didn't realize when Helaena's running down the steps and she stops and she, like, takes a breath. By the way, I wanted to say that she acted that breath out really good, because something that we do naturally when we're kids, when we're crying really hard, you breathe in, like, you take two more small breaths. Mm-hmm. That's something that actually helps us regulate our nervous system without, like, us knowing it, you know? Mm-hmm. So I thought that was really interesting that she acted that part that way. I was like, oh, that was really, like, good, because, like, that's authentic. That's what our bodies do when we're, like, overwhelmed in that way for nervous system.
Terrific actor. Yeah,
but, like, when she takes the breath and she changes directions from where she's going, Sam had pointed out to me she, like, had her Claire audience. Well, okay,
so I think to lead up to that, so Maddie had said she was on TikTok, and obviously, you know,
TikTok
is always 100% truth, right? No, we're kidding. Yes. Please, we don't believe that. But she was like, okay, well, there was, like, a theory on TikTok that Sir Kristen and Allison, when Helaena walks in on them having sex, they were actually in Rhaenyra's room, her old room. And I was like, I tried to quickly see if I could fact check it, but we didn't have time. I didn't have time to do a deep dive. But then what I said is, you know what supports that is the fact that Helaena, when she's running with her daughter, she's running towards very quick, like surely towards one direction, clearly where Allison's chambers might be. But then she does stop in where she gets to, like, a fork in the road, so to speak. And she turns around and she starts going another direction. And I'm like, that could have been, if they were actually in Rhaenyra's quarters, where Allison would have normally been in her own quarters, then that could have been a clairvoyant, almost, like, instinct. Like, okay, my mom actually isn't where she usually is. She's this way now. And so I was like, so just in that, you know, I don't know. It's a theory. So We're gonna look and see if the TikTok actually checks out. I want to just look at like the room design and all that stuff and see if I can actually like say in fact they were fucking in Rhaenyra's room, which also supports Maddie's theory of they both just want to be fucking Rhaenyra. Actually,
yes. Yes.
And we will tune back in next week with an answer and a follow up on that. But
absolutely.
I was like, that theory just blew my mind. And then I blew Maddie's mind back when I was like, well, you know, she did stop in her tracks and go a different direction. As if she suddenly thought of something, like suddenly, you know.
Yeah, she knew that she was going the wrong direction. Because first of all, she runs out. And again, where the f- was everybody? Where was everyone?
I mean, it's true.
Like, where were all the guards? Where is everyone? Like,
why doesn't she have her own protector?
I know. She was, like, running for a long time with nobody in sight. I know it's 2 o'clock in the morning, but, like, Jesus.
No, but Kristen Cole was staying in Rhaenyra's bedroom all night. That was his job.
Exactly. Yeah. So, anyways.
Oh, man. Oh, God. This has been fun.
I'm so glad to be back. Yes. Yeah. No, excited to get into the politics and, you know, for me to be, like, a little bit team green sometimes. So, sorry. Love ya.
No, but it makes our conversations interesting. You add another level of perspective, which I really appreciate. So even if I dog the shit out of you on and offline about your you loving them or empathizing with them, I still appreciate it. I think that our listeners appreciate it.
Honestly, I can take it, and I do it purposely because I like when you get a little riled up. You're compassionate and you're smart, so it's nice to see you like fight the good fight.
Well, God, this has been fun. I'm so excited to be back on the podcast. We're going to be putting these out weekly on Tuesday nights every week, so tune in. And I don't know, we're gonna also I think be doing The Bear later on this month. That'll be our first time talking about that show. We did not do season 1 or 2, but Maddie recently watched it, loved it. I loved it. And so I think we're going to add that into the rotation. There's a lot coming up. So stay tuned. Follow us on Instagram at HBHosePod, where we'll post all of our updates.
Hell yeah. See you guys later. Bye.
Bye.